Welcome to Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. The U.S. Capitol attacked by a mob of President Trump supporters reiterating false claims that the November election was stolen. It was not, and that's a fact. Yesterday was a deadly day with one protester shot and killed. It's being reported that three others died due to medical emergencies. The latest numbers show 68 people were arrested and the National Guard has been activated for 30 days. Inside the Capitol, at the time of the mob attack, Congress doing the job of certifying the Electoral College despite the failed objections of a few dozen legislators. Chaos and confusion ensued as the mob entered the Capitol's hallways and chambers. Lawmakers and staffers rushed to safety, many concerned for their lives. The attack, quite possibly, was the most violent since 1814, when British forces tried to burn down the U.S. Capitol. In that incident, the building was looted, set on fire, incinerating the Library of Congress. The fallout from yesterday's attack has been swift and far-reaching. A few headlines we're seeing this morning include: angry Republican leaders float removing Trump from office. Top White House national security officials consider resigning. The world watches Washington with horror. And this is breaking in just the past hour. Facebook and Instagram are blocking President Trump from using their services indefinitely. President Trump has less than 2 weeks in office. Some, like Sacramento Congresswoman Doris Matsui, want him out today. She sent out a press advisory and has tweeted, quote, "I am calling on the vice president to invoke the 25th Amendment and convene the cabinet to remove the president from office." The president continues to put himself above the American people, and his reckless actions to undermine our democracy must be met with equal consequence. Again, a quote from Doris Matsui. Joining us from Washington are three congressmen who represent districts within Cap Radio's broadcast area. Representative Josh Harder is a Democrat from California's 10th Congressional District covering Stanislaus County and parts of San Joaquin County. Nice to have you with us this morning, Congressman Harder.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Representative John Garamendi represents California's 3rd District covering much of Solano, Yolo, Sutter, Yuba, Colusa Lake, and Glenn counties. And nice to have you here as well, Congressman. And Congressman Ami Berra joins us. Berra represents California's 7th Congressional District, which covers much of eastern Sacramento County. That includes Elk Grove, Rancho Cordova, Citrus Heights, and Folsom, just to name a few. And nice to have you here, Congressman, as well.
Randall, thanks for having me on.
So I just want to quickly get you all on record as to whether you are in line with Congresswoman Matsui regarding the 25th Amendment, which is a process that was put in place after the shooting of President John F. Kennedy to establish a transition of power when a president becomes incapacitated. And just moments ago, soon to be Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York says this president should not hold office one day longer and says the quickest and most effective way it can be done today is to invoke the 25th. And I'll start with you, Representative Harder. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's not a decision that's up to Congress. It's up to the president's cabinet and the vice president. But I think that the president's actions yesterday were horrifying. He spoke out of both sides of his mouth. He refused to denounce the violence of his supporters. I hope he takes stronger action today. But the most important question is, how do we bring this country back together? I hope yesterday's events really serve as a wake-up call to all of us that leaders that continue to fuel the fires of difference are really leading us on down a very dangerous path.
Some are saying, including Senator Schumer, that should the people not act to invoke the 25th, that an immediate impeachment would be in order. Would you get behind that effort?
Well, we've got 13 days left, and so I think we'll see how much we have time for. But I think that there should absolutely be accountability for anyone who engages or has incited violence. But I think it's much broader than what we do over the next 13 days. I'd like a much more systematic set of thinking to make this a watershed moment for how we got here in the first place and how do we get ourselves out.
And your thoughts on whether the president did indeed incite this violence?
I think the president's comments yesterday were very clear. I don't know how many of his supporters were watching on Twitter as he was releasing videos, but I think he was clearly speaking out of both sides of his mouth. He said some things nominally condemning the violence, but he also, you know, recognized and called some of the folks patriots who were storming the U.S. Capitol. And I think that type of behavior is absolutely unacceptable by any leader, let alone the president of the United States.
Representative Garamendi, same questions to you regarding the 25th Amendment or impeachment.
No doubt. The president is out of control. And clearly the 25th Amendment should be invoked. Representative Harder was quite correct. That's something that'll have to be done by the administration, by the cabinet and others. But we should support that. Secondly, we absolutely should introduce immediately a resolution for impeachment. There are two very clear impeachable acts that this president has done within the last week. First, he criminally tried to pressure the Secretary of State in Georgia to find 11,800 votes so that the Georgia election would be changed. That's a criminal act, both state and federal. Secondly, he clearly incited the riot yesterday.
Did we just lose him? We just lost him. Congressman Barra, if we could switch over to you and get your thoughts on this. If articles of impeachment were to be introduced, could the whole process happen quickly enough?
You know, I'd have some hesitancy as to whether you could actually do the whole process, but I'm very much in favor of invoking the 25th Amendment. Obviously, the vice president has to initiate that process, but based on, you know, President Trump's actions yesterday, clearly he is unfit to protect the people of this nation. You know, he incited a riot yesterday, which goes directly to the words that he said to his followers. Look, I disagree with Mike Pence on a lot of policy issues, but what I saw yesterday was someone who understood their duties to uphold the Constitution and Vice President Pence's actions. So I think the country would be more safe if Vice President Pence was making the decisions, not President Trump.
All right. I'd like to get a little into how the day played out yesterday, because the three of you were on Capitol Hill. And I'll start with you, Congressman Harder. What was going through your mind when you first realized that things were going awry at the Capitol?
Well, I think like many Americans, I was just shocked and appalled. I didn't think that something like this was possible. I thought our protection of the Capitol was stronger. We haven't had an invasion of the U.S. Capitol since the British Army took it over in the War of 1812. But my first thoughts were really, how do we keep people safe? I had a staff member in our office who was evacuated and held in lockdown all day. He was able to go home close to the end of the night. But then my second thought is, you know, how do we get ourselves out of this? I think I was shocked, but not surprised to see this violent riot at the floor of the Capitol. And I really want to make sure that this becomes a moment of introspection for all of us around how do we make sure that in a period where we're dealing with a pandemic, when we're dealing with so many people out of work, that these differences are resolved at the ballot box and not in the streets.
Congressman Garamendi, what do you make of the security at the Capitol yesterday? Apparently, there's much more security there this morning, but how was that not the case yesterday?
An excellent question, in which we're going to have to investigate and find out. There was literally no security at all. I just think back a couple of months ago with the Black Lives Matter effort and rally here in Washington, D.C., there had on the steps of the Capitol hundreds of military personnel in full battle gear. None of that was available yesterday. Clearly, it was a lax and clearly a dereliction of the safety of the Capitol. Secondly, we're going to have to make sure that the Capitol cannot be broken into. It's too obviously windows were broken. People were able to enter. All of that are just simple security matters need to be put in place. But I want to go back to this issue of an impeachment. It is critically important that the Congress of the United States put into the record the impeachable offenses that the president has committed in just the last 10 days. He did incite the riot yesterday, as well as a couple of members of Congress at that rally urging those Trump supporters to march on the Capitol, and they clearly incited the riot. Secondly, the effort to overturn the vote of the people in Georgia. We need to have that in the record. Will we be able to put it all the way through?
Right.
Probably not.
But you just want it on record.
Absolutely.
At the very least.
We need to have it on record. We have the tapes of the president. We have the tapes of the rally that took place. All of that needs to be in the congressional record so that forevermore the impeachable acts of Donald Trump are noted and recorded.
Congressman Barra, California Representative Linda Sanchez from Whittier told MSNBC yesterday that she was uncomfortable in the room where they were taken for security because there were several Republican members of Congress in there not wearing masks. Did you have a similar experience?
You know, I was not sheltering in place in the same room that Congresswoman Sanchez was. So I can't really comment on that. But, you know, throughout the whole pandemic, you know, it's been disappointing watching many of our Republican colleagues disregard, you know, the public health measures that we've put in place. And, you know, that's something I worry about with this mass riot and the number of people that were on the mall. You know, we're in the middle of this pandemic, and we very well may see a big spike in the number of cases here in D.C., much as we're seeing back home in California. So, you know, that was disappointing. On the issue of protections, you know, this absolutely should have been anticipated by the Capitol Police. You know, we knew Trump was inviting everyone to the Capitol. We knew his record of invoking violence. You know, there wasn't an adequate barrier and perimeter set up. There wasn't an adequate police force. And, you know, I appreciate the Capitol Police and the protections they offer us and so forth, but this was a failure in planning.
Representative Harder, what's the mood at the Capitol this morning?
Well, I think we're all trying to figure out how do we pick up the pieces and get back to work. And I do think it's important to note that this whole thing isn't over. It's not over yet, and it won't be over even when President Biden gets elected or it gets inaugurated on January 20th. Because last night in our votes, or early this morning when the votes were taken, 60% of our Republican colleagues in the House voted to not count the Electoral College votes of Arizona and Pennsylvania. And I'm not suggesting that that's associated with some of the violence that we've seen. I think there's been a little bit more responsibility taken by those members. Many of them just have very different points of view. But clearly, our country remains very divided, not just about all the issues that we have to deal with on healthcare and jobs and all the rest, but even on the basic results of how do we conduct free and fair elections that people can have confidence in. And so I hope as we, you know, look towards having a new president in another 13 days, that we really try to figure out how do we got ourselves on this path and how do we restore that confidence in the legitimacy of our system of government? Because if we're going to be that beacon of light that we need to be across the world, we need to do a lot better than we've seen over the last 24 hours.
Yeah. How do you do that, Congressman, when yesterday seven members of Congress from California and members of the Republican Party voted against the election certification, despite what happened yesterday? And you are one of the Democrats who flipped a swing district the election before last and then held it back in November. Congratulations for that. I've been following your work in Congress since you first won the seat, and I've noticed over the last couple of years that your press releases often contain the word bipartisan or something indicating that the type of issue or legislation falls along those lines. When an incident like yesterday's Capitol attack happens, how do you then reach out to the numerous Trump supporters in your district to indicate the gravity of what happened while maintaining your bipartisan appeal moving forward?
Well, the good news is many of them reached out to me. You're right. Half of my community in Stanislaus and San Joaquin County voted for Trump. Half didn't. But there are about 30,000, 35,000 Trump voters that also voted for me. And I was actually hearing from a lot of Trump supporters, a lot of Republicans across the Central Valley yesterday who were saying, this is appalling. This is not who we are. This violence is not indicative of the values of the Republican Party or of the values of folks who voted for Trump. And so that gives me a lot of hope. I heard from a lot of senior elected Republican officials across our district who were just as horrified by what we saw yesterday as I was. And so I think the first thing that we need to do is we need to figure out how do we restore confidence and legitimacy and trust in our political system. And so I'd be willing to work with our Republican counterparts to come up with that new Voting Rights Act that I think is necessary to make sure that if there are doubts people have about our election system, that we can get those resolved instead of just pointing fingers and trying to prevent what we saw yesterday happening in another 2 years after the next election.
And I do want everyone to know that we reached out to several Republican lawmakers from our area to come on Insight today. All declined or did not respond, but we still want you to hear at least what they're saying. So we'll do that through their social media posts. Fourth District Congressman Tom McClintock said on Twitter, the attack on the Capitol strikes at the most sacred act of our democracy, the peaceful transfer of power. It is an outrage and a threat to our most fundamental principles as a free people. And First District Congressman Doug LaMalfa said on Facebook, violence, no matter by who or for what reason, is inexcusable and must be dealt with immediately, forcefully, and with the full force of the law. The actions at the Capitol today hurt our country. Congressman Garamendi, how do you continue to work with the other side after events like today, after the votes from the seven different Republican members of California's congressional delegation? How do we move forward as a country on this?
First of all, 13 days from now, the instigator of much of this discord in America will no longer be president. We've had 4 years of a president that has gone out of his way in every action that he took to divide the nation, not to heal, not to bring the nation together. Unlike Democratic and Republican presidents in the past that attempted to, and in many ways was successful, in bringing America together on a variety of issues. Trump did not do that. He will be gone. And secondly, we will have a president who has gone out of his way, even last night in his statement, to bring the nation together, to find commonality. That's critically important. The leadership change will be the first and most important step. Secondly, as Rep. Harder said just a moment ago, we need to do our work as members of Congress. I was frankly very, very pleased to hear the comments of both LaMalfa and McClintock in their statements, very strong statements condemning the violence. That's good. Obviously, the three of us are doing the same. We're condemning the violence. So we're on the same page in that regard. So we've got very, very important work out ahead of us. Obviously, the COVID pandemic continues to rage. That's order and task one, and both Democrats and Republicans will work together to do that. We actually did that with a $900 billion piece of legislation that became law just a week ago. So there are plenty of opportunities for us to work together. And of course, there'll be other opportunities where we'll have different points of view. That's to be expected.
What does it say about our democracy, Congressman Barrow, when Turkey, for instance, a country led by a dictator, sends a message saying the events in the U.S. are worrying? Several other countries have weighed in. How do you believe the rest of the world is looking at the United States right now?
You know, the actions that happened yesterday certainly damage our reputation as this beacon of democracy, of freedom, et cetera. And, you know, certainly that builds on 4 years of President Trump damaging our global reputation. The best way to remedy that is, you know, if you watched President-elect Biden's press conference yesterday, you saw what a president looks like and does and says. And, you know, I firmly believe that President Biden will have that opportunity in the Biden-Harris administration to repair our relationship. And, you know, it's my hope that, yeah, we saw 60% of the House Republicans, you know, do a travesty yesterday and how they voted. But maybe that other 40%, this was a wake-up call, and they'll be willing to say, look, enough of this. We may disagree on policy, but let's come together to address the real challenges that we face here domestically, but also the threats that we've faced internationally. And, you know, there is an urgency for us to do that as a body, as Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Representative Harder, what's on the docket for today? You're at your congressional office?
Well, I think one thing is we got to just be able to communicate with our teams. I think many people were shocked in my community, and I'm going to be spending a lot of today just talking and listening to them and figuring out what ideas they have for how we move forward and get off this very dangerous path that we found ourselves on, as well as just reassuring my team members that were spending yesterday in a couple cases fearful of their own safety, and just trying to make sure that we can get back to work. We have another 13 days with this president, assuming nothing happens between now and then. And so we've got to do the best we can with the resources we have. And I think job number one has got to be figuring out how do we deal with these challenges of a pandemic and people out of work without resorting to the violence that we saw yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And Congressman Garamendi, what would you like to see happen as soon as today?
Today, we actually saw the restoration of our constitutional democracy. Late last night, around the turn of the clock to this day, the 7th of January, the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate reconvened. We cleared the police cleared the protesters out of the Capitol, and as soon as they were gone, we re-entered the Capitol and we restored our democracy. That's step one, and that happened today. There's much, much more to do. I know that my staff, I'm sure Ami and Josh Harder's staff are doing the same, preparing legislation for the new presidency. We're working on every kind of legislation you can imagine. On the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, we're working on a massive infrastructure legislation. Actually, most of it was passed last year, and we're going to deliver that on towards the end of January when the new president's in place. We're working on the next National Defense Authorization Act right now. We had to override the president's veto on that. First time ever in the history of the United States that legislation was vetoed by a president. But we're going to move forward on, that's just two examples, and I'm sure Ami and Josh have their own agenda that they're working on.
And Congressman Barra, what's your top priority following yesterday's events?
You know, I'm watching closely to see how my Republican colleagues respond and what they say. And, you know, I just saw that Congressman Kinzinger, who's a close friend from Illinois, you know, has invoked, you know, the 25th Amendment as well. So I think that's going to be important. We're going to see what comes out of the White House today. And then, you know, a little later on this afternoon, the senior leadership of the Foreign Affairs Committee, of which I'm a part of, we're going to huddle to answer the previous question is, how do we start messaging and projecting that while our democracy was challenged yesterday, we are still strong, and we've got to send that message to the world that, you know, America is still here and we will see that peaceful transfer of power. So, you know, and then I look forward to getting back to Elk Grove sometime tomorrow.
That's California's 7th Congressional District Representative Ami Barra. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Also, California's 10th Congressional District Representative Josh Harder, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And 3rd District Representative John Garamendi, we appreciate you being here as well.
Thank you, and we appreciate your program. Thank you.
Okay, well, lots more still to come. Up next on Insight, we continue to look at the events of yesterday through a historical lens with none other than the political junkie Ken Rudin. He joins us up next with his perspective. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. We just heard from three of our local representatives who were at the U.S. Capitol yesterday when the violence broke out on Capitol Hill. Here's what President-elect Biden had to say shortly after the violence had been brought under control.
The scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect a true America, do not represent who we are. What we're seeing are a small number of extremists dedicated to lawlessness. This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition. And it must end now.
Now, there are reports members of the president's cabinet had to practically beg him to send a message to his supporters asking them to leave the Capitol area. He eventually did, but it appears he could not resist taking another swipe at the November election during his comments.
This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel.
Well, joining us now is Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Ken, nice to speak with you today.
Good morning, Randall. What a day yesterday was. What a day.
Yeah, we all know what happened, of course, was shocking, appalling, hard to watch if you were watching it on television or listen to if you were here on an NPR station. Can you try to put the attack on the U.S. Capitol into some historical perspective for us? We've mentioned the fact that it's the worst attack since the 1800s. What more can you lend to that?
Randall, if I may, just let me respond to one thing that Congressman Barrett said that this is really bugging me, because he said that he was he thinks that the Republicans may come to their senses because it's a wake up. What happened yesterday was a wake-up call. If after 4 years of hate speeches, dog whistles, erosion of democracy, they needed to wait until January 7th, 2021 to get to for a wake-up call, I fear that the Congress is more divided than he acknowledges. And the fact that 138 Republicans still voted against accepting the electoral votes for Joe Biden after all the violence happened, I think, you know, it's one thing to say, like, for Mitt Romney to stand up, and he was magnificent yesterday, standing up and saying this, you know, this, you've been begging for this to happen. You've been egging this on. This should not come as a shock. There are some Republicans who have stood up, more who have not. And to me, that, you know, I know that we have 13 days to go before the inauguration, but I think the nation needs much more than 13 days to heal. It may take years.
You mentioned Senator Romney in the Senate yesterday. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, prior to the mob violence, said if this election were overturned by mere allegations from the losing side, our democracy would enter a death spiral. That's a quote from him. And he also said we'd never see the whole nation accept an election again. He really came out forcefully against the president's unfounded and incorrect allegations of voter fraud.
Yes, he did. But he also said right after that statement, he said, you know, we don't want to do what the Democrats did in 2005 when Barbara Boxer signed on to the appeal, to the objection to the vote of the counting of the electoral votes in Ohio that was done by Stephanie Tubbs Jones. Barbara Boxer, the Democrats, tried to do it in 2005, and the media
Did we lose
that.
Ken Rudin there?
Oh, no, really?
Just one moment from Antonio behind the board. Okay, great. Ken, sorry about that. Can you continue?
Well, I'm just going to say that, you know, for Mitch McConnell to compare what happened with this dispute. No, I'm not. You know, you don't hear me?
No, I'm sorry. I do hear you, Ken. They were asking me if I was getting an echo in my ear. Sorry for the confusion for people listening.
Yeah. Let me just I'll say this quickly, that for Mitch McConnell, which he did after that splendid statement to say this is what the Democrats tried to pull in 2005 with Barbara Boxer, that was just outrageous. John Kerry had conceded. Barbara Boxer was not trying to change the results of the election. She wanted to make a protest. So McConnell, yes, but he also acquiesced in four years of everything that President Trump did. There was no objection from Republicans when you heard him on that telephone call with Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, when he said, please find me 11,000 votes. So yes, some Republicans deserve an applause, a pat on the back, but let's not just be too generous with our accommodations of what the Republicans have been doing. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to mention, people don't know that Ken can see me via Zoom, and I was shaking my head no, and so Ken instantly thought that I couldn't hear him. But no, we can hear you loud and clear now, Ken, which is great. So back to the historical perspective, this will be something people will be reading about in the history books 100 years from now?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, everybody's talked about the 1814 British burning down of the Capitol in the aftermath or during the War of 1812. Of course, the War of 1812 continued to the War of 1814. They probably should change the name of the war, I mean, just to be fair. But yes, I mean, but you know what also, not that I remember, of course, but I had a former member of Congress on my program not too long ago talking about this event in 1954, when four Puerto Rican nationalists or terrorists, whatever you want to call them, before there was security into the Capitol, they went into the House gallery and started shooting down on the House floor, injuring five members of Congress. Nobody died, but some were pretty badly hurt. Matter of fact, the last Puerto Rican nationalist died last year. But that's as close as I can come to thinking. I mean, the Weather Underground put a bomb in the Senate bathroom in 1971 that exploded. Nobody got hurt. But the Puerto Rican attack in 54, and of course the British attack in 1814, burning it down. But this frightens me because I don't think in any of those previous cases, democracy was threatened. The British was an outside force. The Puerto Rican nationalists, in a way, was an outside force. These are homegrown. These are people who support the president of the United States. And I feel, look, was it a coup attempt? I think that's a little bit much. Was it an insurrection? Absolutely. What they did and what they probably would have done more so had there not been a belated a response by law enforcement. This just frightened me. It just and the fact that it was aided and abetted by the president of the United States, who was refusing to accept the election results. Never, you think of 1876 with Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden, a presidential election that was done on the side, on the sly, because some electoral votes were switched. But this is the most dangerous attempt at undermining American democracy that I could think of in our history.
None of the other examples that you gave included a situation where the president was influencing what happened.
That's a very important point. I mean, you think of all the things about for 4 years attacking the press. The press is the enemy of the American people, demeaning people, insulting people. And then that's why what Congressman Barr said about, well, maybe this is a wake up call. My goodness, this should have been a wake up call nearly every day since the president and Mrs. Trump came down that escalator in Trump Tower in 2015. The rhetoric has been harsh. The threats have been obvious. The ugliness has been apparent. And my goodness, you think of just with 2 weeks to go in his presidency, this is still happening. I mean, how many times have I been on your show talking about the word unprecedented since 2016, 2017? But yesterday was just beyond.
Ken, just this morning, the president's former attorney general, William Barr, a longtime supporter of President Trump's, weighed in saying, quote, "Orchestrating a mob to pressure Congress is inexcusable. The president's conduct yesterday was a betrayal of his office and supporters." This is a former Attorney General William Barr. How unprecedented is this?
Well, you know, Barr has been pretty much lately, I mean, when he said a few weeks ago that he saw no evidence at all of any underhanded attempt to fix or corrupt the 2020 presidential election, that put William Barr, once upon a time, Donald Trump's best friend, on the hate list. The fact that there were people on Pander yesterday who talked about hanging Mike Pence because he refused to go along with it. The vitriol and the hate and the unbelievable language that we're hearing against the erstwhile allies of the president. This is not a Republican Party. This is a cult movement. I don't know if it's Jim Jones magnified, but the fact is that there are people who are sworn to abide by Donald Trump. And if Donald Trump wants to rip apart his attorney general, his vice president, they're willing to go along with it.
Political junkie Ken Rudin. Ken, a short time ago, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced they've blocked President Trump's Facebook and Instagram accounts indefinitely. Zuckerberg saying in a statement, quote, "We believe the risks of allowing the president to continue to use our service during this period are simply too great." He says the
If you go on my Facebook, by the way, I was banned for I'm still part of a ban from Facebook for 24 hours because of what I said about Trump yesterday. But having said that, I posted on my Facebook page yesterday morning about Facebook and about Twitter. How could you allow this to happen? How could you allow a president to incite violence? And this is before it even happened. I mean, before it got so crazy. How could you, do you have to wait till somebody is killed before you allow this hatred to be spread all over social media? Maybe they banned me as just part of a trade or something like that. But it was just, I mean, if that's the best they can do for example, Twitter, for so long, they've been saying, we don't agree, or this tweet by the president does not conform with reality. And that's ridiculous. They should just close these things down before more people get hurt, before more violence is taking place.
Ken, what are your thoughts on calls to invoke the 25th Amendment or to file papers of impeachment?
Well, I mean, I understand it, and I know that some members of Congress are talking about it. When the Congressman Barrett was talking about Adam Kinzinger, the Republican from Illinois, he's one of the people who's talking about it. That's a process that's going to take far more than 14 days. Impeachment, let's just see if we can survive 13 days. What's remarkable to me is the headline yesterday should have been the Democrats win both Senate seats in Georgia.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about, there was a lot of history made.
Raphael Warnock, they were not supposed to win. I'm sorry?
I wanted to bring that up. There was a lot of history made yesterday that would have been headlines had the rest not happened.
I mean, that is remarkable. The fact is, I mean, that became page 2 or page 20, but nothing we saw yesterday. And these people have not changed their minds. The taunting, the violence, the anger, the insisting that Joe Biden is not the truly elected, rightfully elected president, that doesn't disappear on January 20th. And look, Donald Trump may not be on social media until January 20th, but he's probably going to be back doing something like that afterwards. And his followers show no indication of changing. I mean, if Mike Pence announced today, I am resigning as vice president, that would be a bigger statement than anything that the 25th Amendment or an impeachment possibility would partake.
Mm. Political junkie Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Do you think I'm a little excited about what happened yesterday? I mean, my goodness, Randall.
I hear just a little bit of it in your voice. Just a little bit. Touch.
Randall, take care.
In there. Thank you, Ken. Still ahead, the difference in policing Black Lives Matter protesters and Trump supporters who have protested the election results and Electoral College count. And what happened at the California State Capitol yesterday after supporters of President Trump protested the Electoral College count? We've got a pair of Cap Radio reporters joining us in just a moment here on Insight. We're back in just a moment. I'm Randall White.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. When pro-Trump extremists stormed the U.S. Capitol building on Wednesday, many people asked where law enforcement was to stop them. But several black activists say response from law enforcement has been different for demonstrations led by far-right groups than protests by Black Lives Matter and other racial justice groups. Cap Radio's race and equity reporter Sarah Mises-Tan is here to talk a little more about this. Hello, Sarah.
Hey, Randall. It's good to be here.
Well, it's nice to see you. Sarah, we've seen demonstrations here in Sacramento with significant police presence from agencies throughout Northern California. We also saw the National Guard in Sacramento and other cities during, you'll recall, the George Floyd protests. It seems that the law enforcement presence was not the same yesterday at the U.S. Capitol. What are people seeing? And more importantly, I guess, what are they saying?
So I think many activists who led racial justice demonstrations in Sacramento and throughout California this summer certainly feel there's been a disconnect in law enforcement response. Here's Tanya Faison of Black Lives Matter Sacramento.
It's a very like a high contrast difference. You're able to see very blatantly that the city of Sacramento and that the Sacramento Police Department and that the county of Sacramento and the Sheriff Department don't respond to people that are demonstrating on behalf of Donald Trump or that are predominantly white crowds. They don't get the same response as people that are fighting just to stay alive.
She mentions that racial justice demonstrators over the summer were hit with rubber bullets and tear gas. And as you mentioned, the National Guard was even called in to oversee demonstrations. And, you know, I think it's worth noting that since the election for the past 7 weeks, we've seen Trump demonstrators at the Capitol, and there has not been that sort of response. I also spoke with Kat Brooks, the co-founder of the Anti-Police Terror Project in Oakland. She says Black Lives Matter demonstrators and Trump demonstrators seen today cannot be compared, though they may use similar tactics. The motives of the two demonstrations are vastly different.
Listen, I don't disagree. I would be a hypocrite if I sat in this interview with you and I said that people don't have a right to demonstrate, that if I were to say to you that people don't have a right to shut things down in the name of what they believe is right, right? Like I am someone who has spent the last, you know, almost 20 years in the street engaging in various tactics. I have shut down city council meetings. I have participated in the blockage of freeways. I have stopped traffic. It's not the tactics that or the size. That is not the problem. What the problem is the both promised and actual delivery of violence.
And there she, you know, she's speaking to kind of the false equivalence that she feels police forces or, you know, legislators may be using when they say, well, certain demonstrations over the summer got to a certain point and certain demonstrations that we see at the Capitol have not gotten to that point yet. It's that promise of violence that she's saying was not there for one set of demonstrations and is there for another.
Finish. Mm-hmm.
She says Black Lives Matter demonstrators have been asking for a more inclusive country and for equal rights for all Americans. Meanwhile, Trump demonstrators are asking for a white exclusive country. And so there's a key difference there.
Sarah, I know you've also spoken to academics who study protest movements specifically. What are they saying about what happened at the U.S. Capitol and the consequences?
So a lot of academics who've been studying mobilization of far-right groups believe that these kinds of actions have a big ripple effect on democracy long after things like storming a national capital have faded from our memories, if that event is in fact ever going to fade from our memories. Lindsay Schubiner is a researcher at the Western State Center. That's an organization that studies far-right extremist groups on the West Coast. She says the perception that law enforcement response is unequal for different demonstrations is going to continue to sow divisions. Here she is.
you know, I think it's really troubling when we see a law enforcement response that that is or appears to be not even-handed and treats, you know, different groups of protesters differently.
And she adds that actions like what happened in D.C. and what demonstrators at the Sacramento Capitol have been threatening to do can impact policy because lawmakers can actually feel pressured to take or not take certain action for fear of violent repercussions.
Mm-hmm. White nationalists and paramilitary groups so frequently operate in an anti-democratic manner based on violence and threats. And that has a significant chilling effect on democratic participation and process and the ability of other community members to organize for their rights, right? Many, many people are organizing for racial justice, but I think we can't underestimate the negative impact on our democracy that this kind of mobilization can have.
Sarah, what are you hearing from Sacramento area elected officials or law enforcement agencies?
Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg has called the demonstrators in D.C. abhorrent on Twitter yesterday. And according to CHP and the Sacramento police, the event was not permitted, but they've said the two agencies did work together. CHP said in a statement that they had law enforcement ready to defend the Capitol if necessary, but I haven't gotten comment from any of these entities in terms of if they do have a plan going forward in place, especially after the action that we've seen yesterday in D.C. And I haven't necessarily heard anything about what their plan has been for law enforcement, given that these groups have been pretty regularly demonstrating at the Capitol since November.
And Mayor Steinberg referring specifically to D.C. when he said abhorrent, and the CHP and Sacramento police referring to the demonstrations at the Capitol in Sacramento.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. Cap Radio's race and equity reporter, Sarah Mises-Tan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Randall.
Yeah, and let's bring in Cap Radio's state government reporter, Scott Rodd. He was at the State House in Sacramento yesterday when Trump supporters, Proud Boys and more protested the Electoral College count. Scott, always good to speak with you.
Glad to be on.
So what was going on there as all of this mayhem was happening at the Capitol in D.C.?
Well, you know, by comparison, what was happening here in California's capital was, you know, mild, mellow compared to what we were seeing in D.C. There was no attempts or even discussion of storming the Capitol. You know, CHP was out in, you know, pretty strong force as they have been over the last 8 weeks or so. But there was tension in the air. Certainly, there was a lot of frustration. You know, a lot of the anger that folks were feeling in D.C. that caused them to storm the Capitol. A lot of that anger was being expressed here as well.
Was there any concern that people at that demonstration might think, hey, look what they're doing in D.C. We can do that here?
I mean, I was thinking that. I was watching what was happening in D.C. and wondering, well, is this how are folks going to react to it here as they're watching it? And again, no one was talking about storming the Capitol here or there were no attempts. But folks were watching it as well in the crowd and saying, you know, there was a sense of combination of almost sort of curiosity, intrigue, disbelief, and giddiness. Like, you know, people were there to have their voices heard. They're subscribing to this conspiracy theory that the election has been stolen. No credible evidence of that, but they strongly believe it. And they're seeing that folks are storming the Capitol on the other side of the country. And there was a sense of, you know, what we're doing here is having, you know, a real world effect and impact. We're seeing it play out in real time.
Scott, you've been covering these demonstrations at the Capitol for a while now. Your reporting has been amazing. I'm wondering, why were they there yesterday? What provoked them yesterday? What were they telling you?
Yes, it was all about the congressional, you know, confirmation of the electoral votes. You know, they were out because, Trump and his supporters were calling for, you know, a rally in D.C., but also at state capitals around the country. So folks on this end, you know, were heeding that call. There were many folks who, you know, who would typically attend a weekend rally here in Sacramento, who went to DC, mm-hmm. but there were a number of, you know, who were still here that attended this one. So they were very much here for that purpose. And in recent weeks, the protests have been kind of more mild over the holidays. They, you know, it was a smaller showing, no violence that I could see, but this in my mind may have sparked sort of perhaps another wave of protests. I'm curious to see what will happen this weekend.
Yeah, I was wondering, in just about 30 seconds, what are you hearing about plans for the weekend?
You know, I'm not hearing anything concrete right now, but these things come together very mm-hmm. quickly. You know, when something like this occurs, you know, that can really spark motivation and action quite quickly. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on it. And if they're out there, I'll be out there too.
All right. Cap Radio's state government reporter, Scott Rodd, always appreciate your perspective and your reporting.
Thank you.
And that is Insight for today. You can hear the whole show at capradio.org/insight. And I want to thank producers Cynthia Lopez, Kyle McKinnon, and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minotta. Our technical director, Mark Jones. Engineer is Antonio Muniz. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. And again, you can get today's show or any show as a podcast, and you can find those links on our website at capradio.org/insight. I'm Randall White. Thanks for joining us this morning. We'll catch you back here on Monday when we will continue our discussions of the news of the day.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.